Super excited to have AMS as a new sponsor of this podcast. AMS is a premier substance use disorder treatment facility in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. AMS specializes in outpatient counseling services for individuals struggling with substance use disorders. Evidence-based, client-centered care is their main focus. AMS offers over 30 different group therapy options a month, individualized counseling sessions, and the options of receiving medication assistance. Your treatment is in your hands. AMS currently accepts Delaware and Maryland Medicaid, Medicare, and VA benefits. For help, call 302-227-1320 and schedule your intake appointment today. All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I'm Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Welcome. It is April 1st, April Fool's Day, you pranksters. I'm not going to start off with like I drink. An April Fool's drink joke. Nah. I'm sure... Actually, I'm not in the joking mood this morning. I'm a little inconvenienced, honestly. My youngest son has got a cold or allergies or whatever. And he just doesn't want to go to school. And man, big ass inconvenience that is. Big inconvenience. I think you should go. I'm like, you should go. Stick it out. Starts some tears. So I said, come on. So he's at the salon. He's going to hang with me today. It's allergies. I mean, Monday, man, my allergies were kicking in. My eyes are itching right now. It's an allergy thing. You know, it's not like he has COVID. Just allergies. Everything's about COVID. Oh, boy. COVID. So, you know, I'm just going to pick up where I left off, talking about that first step, you know. I think we pretty much figured out, we admitted we were... the we's. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. What does that mean, unmanageable? I mean, unmanageable is, you know, I guess it depends on who's looking at it, right? You know, I've said it before. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable to everybody else. That's right. Everybody else. You know, one of the great things, honestly, about being sober is that I end up talking to a lot of people about sobriety. And different people will come to me with different stories and scenarios. And what they're telling me is that whoever they're concerned about, that person's life has become unmanageable to them, to the person that's talking to me. I mean, that's how it was in, you know, when I finally got somewhat sober in March 31st, which would have been really, today would have been my original anniversary. March 31st, 1997, when this was the first time I put down the drink. And, you know, it wasn't that there was this moment where I decided I drank too much. I got in a fight. You know, I was running my mouth. Actually, I didn't even get in a fight. I just got punched in the face. Probably by the bartender or by somebody. I'll never know. But my life became unmanageable to them. Had to go to the hospital. My life became unmanageable to the doctor. You know, I called a friend of mine at the time, my life became unmanageable to her. I definitely did not call my parents at night. My life had already become too unmanageable for them. My life had become unmanageable to everybody else except for me. So when it says we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable, I think for a lot of us, it's just our lives have become unmanageable for everybody else. You know, you start, I don't know where you start gathering friends, fifth, sixth, I mean, school, right? You gather friends in school, and I remember in ninth and tenth grade, I had a wealth of friends, just a ton of them. You know, you have all the people that you see at school every day, and then the people that you hang out with after school, and then the friends of the people that you hang out with, and you just build this huge group of friends, right? It's the best time of our lives, high school. But we started doing, you know, I remember trying to figure out if we could smoke pot in eighth grade. I mean, that's when my, you know, that's when my life started to become unmanageable for the world. My life was very, very unmanageable for my parents as a teenager. You know, there's the behavior. And then, of course, when your kid's bad, you got to punish them, right? And then when they're being punished, you're basically punishing yourself because, especially grounding. Grounding is a, it's a tough one because you got to sit there with your kid being grounded. I mean, you don't have to, but it seems like what we ended up, that's at least what my parents ended up doing. They were grounded too. I cannot get over what a fucking mess I was in high school and how my parents had to handle that. You know, this morning, my son, he doesn't feel well. He, you know, I need to bring him to the salon with me. I was really annoyed and frustrated. I can't imagine what it would be like if my son was smoking weed and ditching school and lying to me. I'm not sure how I would manage that at all. You know, I like to give my parents a lot of credit because, you know, they're great. My mom passed, but my parents were great people. You know, they were great people. My dad was military. My mom was a bookkeeper. I mean, they were great people. They still are. My dad's still great. You know, maybe my parents like to have parties. I'm not going to blame my parents for my drinking because of their parties, but it definitely made it look like it was a lot of fun. But, you know, that's not their fault or their problem. You know, I remember my mom, she smoked cigarettes, and we started smoking cigarettes. Probably because of my mom, because we stole a pack of her cigarettes. And then they kind of allowed us to continue to smoke. I'm not sure that was a good choice, but whatever. But there was a point in my life where my life was super unmanageable, and my parents were trying to figure out how to manage it. And back in 1983, 84, 85, I mean, smoking pot was like dancing with the devil. I mean, my dad was so bothered by us smoking pot, he used to drug test us. He used to have to go buy drug tests. That's not very manageable. And I'd be like, I haven't smoked it during the whole time. I haven't smoked it. All right, well, your drug test is tomorrow. I haven't smoked it. Here's the cup. I might have smoked some. What a bunch of shit. How does that change my father's life and my mother's path? You know, today we're pretty lax on marijuana. You know, we don't stress. Most people aren't really freaking out. I mean, if your kid smokes pot, I have a friend. He says his kid smokes pot. And he's not really too bothered by it. He's in college, I guess, but he's not, you know, stressed out. Not like our parents were. Oh, my God. Big difference. But that, you know, that you're living a life, and all of a sudden now you have to manage your kid smoking pot. And it was both of us, me and my brother. So now he's dealing with that. And then it was always something else. You know, busting a car window, getting caught putting paint on a garage door. I mean, it was just constantly stressing my parents out. So by the time that night happened, you know, March 31st, 1997, my parents were done. But in the end, my life became unmanageable to everybody else, just like I hear stories of people that are trying to get themselves, or not themselves, but get their friends sober, or, you know, what to do. And, you know, that's what we do. We make our problem everybody else's. So we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. It's an interesting. It's a great welcoming step. Welcome. We admitted we are powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. That sounds perfect. I'll take it. But it wouldn't be till later on, years later, honestly, of being sober and working a program and going back out and coming back in, where I started to understand the effects of my life on everybody else's. You know, my buddy Matt used to say, we take people hostage. And I was like, oh my God, I would never, ever take somebody hostage. But that's what we do. We take them hostage. We take them hostage emotionally and physically. You know, the first time I got married, I took her hostage. I had a relationship go bad. I was insecure, full of doubt, full of fear, freshly sober. My first sponsor says, don't have a relationship in the first year. And I didn't really, but then again, I did. I don't remember the exact timeline, but it was, you know, you get sober, you stop drinking, the fucking dents pop out, you start to get yourself a little bit in some sort of shape, start feeling better about yourself. You know? And I remember I started dating a girl, and she was 50,000 freaking times better than I ever was. Immediately. I don't know why she's with me. Immediately. I wasn't prepared for this kind of thing. I mean, I was so broken down, the fact that anybody was giving me the time of day, I mean, I was just like I'd hit the lottery. You know, I keep checking the numbers. Are these the right numbers? And when the relationship ended, because of course it was going to end, I was a mess. I mean, I guess it had been a year. I'd been sober probably a year. But even, you know, a year I think is a compromise. It probably needs to be 2 years. But, you know, we are human. But I remember she broke up with me. And I was so upset and distraught. And honestly, you know, the breakup had probably started 3 months prior. You know, oh, she's not smiling at me like she used to. She must know that I'm a piece of shit. I had zero confidence. I had zero foundation. I had no direction. I was hanging on by my fingernails. And she broke up with me. And just like I've done all my life, I found another girl, like, boom, that night. Great, 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 great girl. But maybe, you know, maybe not exactly my type. Actually, even better, right? Even made me feel even worse, really. Not really, but, you know, I grabbed onto her because I felt bad. I'd been broken up with. I was, you know, I was insecure. I shouldn't have been even in a relationship. But I grabbed onto this girl because I wanted to make myself feel better. I took her hostage, so to speak. And we would be married for, you know, for almost 7 years. But in the end, I would choose alcohol because it's just how it kind of worked. You know, I never really understood about sobriety. I never understood about relationships. I never understood how women have always been a part of my life. My mom used to say, you always have to have some girl in your life. Yeah, to make myself feel better. To make me feel better about me. I didn't know how to treat a girl or a young lady early in my recovery. I didn't understand any of that. My life became unmanageable to them as well, not drinking. You know, it's tough when you're in a relationship with somebody that's insecure, and I've been that side. I've always felt myself as a secure, confident person. But when I started dating someone that was educated, really doing well in life, and it really exposed how much I wasn't, because it, you know, back in the day I had long hair, you know, I never seemed to have any problems, and that was what I always relied on. But at this point in my life, in my 20s and, you know, my late 20s and early 30s, now I'm, people rely on me for other things other than looks. Like, do you got a job? Do you have any motivation? Are you driven? Are you a lazy bum? And really, the only thing that had changed is I put down the drink. So even free of alcohol, my life became unmanageable to everybody else. I became very insecure, and I've been in a relationship when I've been in that place. Insecure is awful. And it's awful for the person you're in the relationship with. As soon as insecurity shows up, it's almost over. I mean, you may make it, but it's tough. You know, you start trying to do better things, and people are like, why are you working out? I don't know. So I've been in both places, and it's awful. It's awful for the people, and it's awful for me. So we admitted we were powerless over self and that our lives have become unmanageable to everybody else. I mean, if you're in a relationship, whether it's just a friendship or a romantic relationship with somebody that's just constantly dealing and managing and taking care of self, it's discouraging. You know, who wants to be in that kind of relationship? There's a lot more to sobriety. Well, the definition of sobriety, one, to be a person without drinking, to be free of drink. So as far as I was concerned, I was sober. But I was not serene. And that would, eventually start being my downfall. I don't know. I was watching this show with this guy, and he was talking about he went on this big hike, and you know, he's a climber, and he does this free climbing, and he's crazy. I mean, he knows what he's doing, but to me, I'm like, oh shit, that looks crazy. But you know, he was out. You know, it was a no climb day, so he was just gonna just go out and just hike. You know, just have a nice hike for the day, and he started climbing this mountain, And it was kind of rainy and cool, cold and yucky. And he was trying out some of this all-weather gear for this other climb he was going to be doing. So, you know, he was doing some research, trying to understand about what he was wearing and how it handled the weather. And so he took off on this hike, you know, and it's, and as he's going up this mountain, you know, the weather starts to change, you know, and he gets higher and higher, and eventually he ends up in snow. And he gets to a certain point, and all of a sudden he realizes that he can't find his tracks. He's covered in snow. He has gone too far. And at some point, you know, it's scary. He doesn't know what to do, and he realizes that, you know, he could be in some serious danger. But he goes, listen, I'm fed, I'm hydrated, and I have clothing. I should be able to get myself out of this. You know, he went back to the basics. Have I eaten? He had. Have I had water? He had. Does he have clothes? He does. Is he cold? He is, but, you know, he's not completely exposed, you know. And he just started doing the work, step by step, of the impossible task, and he figured out how to get back down the mountain. You know, whenever I'm going to, like this morning, we've got a lot of bad weather in our town right now. It's really raining, and it's windy again, and oh my God, it's like another day of this shit. But, you know, I get it, you know, I get in my car and, you know, I check my surroundings. I look in my mirrors. I make sure everybody's seatbelted, and I start kind of backing out. I check my environment. And I know if I take it slow, I have a decent car, I can head out. I'm prepared. You know, I check my surroundings. I make sure I'm safe. I check all the boxes. Am I good to go? I didn't do that. In early sobriety. You know, I just jumped into stuff. Was I prepared? Am I dressed for this? Am I going to be able to survive this? Who cares? Let's go. It's like jumping off a 50-foot cliff into 3 feet of water. You know, you don't know. And then you're like, whoa, my God, how come I'm so insecure or full of fear or... You know, all these crazy new thoughts that come my way when you're freshly into sobriety. I was not prepared. And I was dying. And when you're in that kind of situation, you make stupid choices to, you know, you panic a bit. And that's kind of how I feel what happened with my first wife. You know, I panicked. And it wasn't fair. I was not prepared. You know, that's not how I handle things today. You know, I've shared in this podcast, you know, with the people podcasting. You know, I started this. I wasn't really prepared for people to want a podcast. And I guess I should have had some sort of infrastructure in place for, like, emailing me and communicating with me so that I wouldn't drop the ball and end up in such an uncomfortable position as I did the other day. You know, I'm sober, but I'm still learning. I still have lots of things to learn. And, but believe me, today, you know, I think about the trip up the mountain, that's for sure. Let's see what a daily reflections is. I got to do another podcast. People are showing up here. Let's see. Daily reflections. All right, April 1st, looking within. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. I love that. 12 steps and 12 traditions, page 42. Step 4 is the vigorous and painstaking effort to discover what the liabilities in each of us have been and are. I want to find exactly how, when, and where my natural desires have warped me. I wish to look squarely at the unhappiness this has caused others and myself. By discovering what my emotional deformities are, I can move toward their correction By discovering what emotional deformities are, I can move toward their correction. Without a willing and persistent effort to do this, there can be little sobriety or contentment for me. To resolve ambivalent feelings, I need to feel a strong and helpful sense of myself. Such an awareness doesn't happen overnight, and no one's self-awareness is permanent. Everyone has the capacity for growth and for self-awareness through an honest encounter with reality. When I don't avoid issues but meet them directly, always trying to resolve them, they become fewer and fewer. There it is. There it is right there. Yep, I'm going to have to cut this podcast short. I got to do some other stuff. I hope everyone's having a great day. And we'll get back to it tomorrow. But, you know, think out a plan. And one day at a time. Bye.
Watch out.